Jacob, check yourself. You're muted.
Oh, I thought I hit the unmute button. I swear I've done this before.
We are complete professionals here.
We are complete professionals. So let me start over. Hello, everyone. I'm Jacob Winograd, and I'm here with another episode of the LCI Green Room. And we're here today for a special roundtable edition. I'm joined to my, I guess, my left by the screen, or right. I don't know. This is all sorts of
all sorts of whopper.
Yeah, all sorts of whopper. I'm joined on one side by our founder, Mr. The Doctor, Norman Horn, and then to the other side, Mr. Cody Cook. So how are you guys, hey gentlemen, doing tonight?
Excellent. Happy to be here, and this is my first green room. I'm so proud of you guys for getting this going. This is fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun to get this going. I know that's something we wanted to do, was make more, you know, video content, go live more. And I think it's a lot of fun to be able to interact with our fans and take chats and questions and things like that. And then doing things live is just sometimes a, you know, it's a different opportunity to create, you know, content. I mean, as the subtitle there goes, open and unscripted. So sometimes we just go off into tangents and we have a plan, then the plan goes awry, and the invisible hand of the podcast market takes over and guides us where we need to be. So
indeed.
Norman, you've been around the block for a while at LCI because you're the founder. Yep. So I don't think you need too much of an introduction, but Mr. Cody Cook here, you are newer to just the LCI scene and our podcast feeds and stuff in general, and so I want to give you an opportunity here at the offset just to introduce yourself a little bit, your background and whatnot, what it is you do.
Yeah, thanks. So I just wrapped up my master's in biblical theology, so I'm definitely on the kind of biblical theology side of things, I guess, is my primary interest, also of course Woo-hoo! Libertarian politics, but yeah, I've been kind of off and on slightly involved in LCI for a little bit. A few years ago, Doug interviewed me for the main podcast about a book that I'd written, which was really cool. And then here and there I've written articles. And so I've been kind of ramping up my involvement in maybe the last year or so, actually maybe a little more than that. I think at the time that I started writing more, LCI was really doing a lot with the podcast content. And I don't know if as much written content was being added regularly. And I sort of felt like that was a niche that I might be able to help a little bit and contribute some hopefully good and thoughtful content that might help fill a need. And you know, one thing that's so cool about LCI is kind of how multifaceted it is. The podcast, articles, books, videos, book clubs, which we should talk about at some point.
Yeah.
And also the different theological backgrounds of its contributors. So it's a really cool project to be involved with. There's really, I think, something for everybody who's considering the intersection of faith and freedom.
Ha, nice way to plug the LCI intro there for our flagship podcast. I can hear Matthew Ballas's voice just in my ears as you say that. Yeah, so we have quite a few things that we want to cover tonight. First of all, I wanted to take the opportunity just for those who might not have been, you know, up to speed yet, that obviously we have this new focus on trying to do live streams, and so the green room is kind of where we are doing that, and we're streaming to all sorts of places. So we're streaming to the Libertarian Christian Institute's YouTube, Facebook, and X account, and then we're also doing it on the Biblical Anarchy Facebook, YouTube, on X account in most instances. So wherever you're watching, make sure that you are subscribed. And also, if you're on YouTube, hit that little bell thing. I know you guys have probably heard content creators say that a million times, but it's just a good way to make sure that you're up to date on when content's coming out, because we don't necessarily have a like regularly scheduled program time that we do these. So I try to announce them on Twitter, though, or X. I don't know what to call it. Actually, I'll take this opportunity to plug. So we've had a bunch of conversations over the last a month or so. I've had Dave Smith on, I've had Spike Cohen, I've had just recently, I had Brian Nichols. So lots of different people from the movement, but in terms of what should we call, what's that?
Preston Sprinkle too.
Preston Sprinkle. Yes, of course. Yeah. For the book, which I actually still have here next to me, Exiles, The Church in the Shadow of Empire. So we had a whole week. It was Preston Sprinkle week where Doug Alex and me all interviewed him in a matter of like a 3-day span. So if you missed that, go back and check that out. Yeah.
It's more of a Preston torrential downpour.
I was gonna say, like, is it raining sprinkle? Is that
okay? It's funny. The reason I brought up Spike Cohen was because my whole I can't remember what to call it extra Twitter. We actually, in that live stream, if you go back and watch it, Spike laid down the law. He said that we have to call it X, but that it will always be tweeting and retweeting. So that is the official Spike Cohen doctrine for how we are to move forward in this new Elon Musk universe of social media.
Elon's universe, and we're just living in it.
pretty much. I just wanted to do that little bit of housekeeping at the onset here. Also, a little extra housekeeping. Want to make sure that you guys are all aware that if you are a fan of my content or Cody's content, Norm, or anyone else at LCI, if you become an LCI insider, which means if you donate $10 or more a month to the Libertarian Christian Institute, then being an insider gets you some perks, including being able to come on to monthly calls with, you know, the three of us here and the others at LCI. So not that we're there every month, but, you know, usually there's 3 to 5 of us, you know, give or take. There's kind of a, you know, rotation, and some of us will pop in and out. But the point is, you get a chance to interact with us and learn more about what we're doing and kind of see a little bit behind the scenes. So, you know, if that's something you're interested in, you can definitely, as the banner says there at the bottom, go to libertarianchristians.com to find out more. And then the last little bit of housekeeping I want to take care of is that there is a survey out right now. And I will have the link in the comments. I'll put that out a little bit later. But the this survey, if you take it, we'll get you a free ebook and other digital downloads as well. And so please, if you're listening to this, to take that survey, because that'll help us out and make sure that we know what kind of content you guys want us to be producing, because we're filthy capitalists here, right? We're here to serve the market demand and give you guys what you want. So, oh, boy. All right. So that's all I have for, you know, boring live stream housekeeping here at the onset. So I got Norman here. I got Cody here. You guys have been doing a lot of work. And Cody, you kind of alluded to the fact that you've been trying to, you know, contribute more on the writing end. Do you want to talk about, you know, some of the articles you've written recently?
Yeah. So, I was going to say, I've got a few in the can that I've already written that will be, I think, coming out sort of in the near future. One is called The Antidote to Anti-Semitism, which I think covers a subject that you're going to be discussing a little bit in the future, which is the role of free speech in responding to stupid and bad ideas, as opposed to trying to censor them, which is a big thing going on right now in Scotland with this new legislation. So that's one of them. I've got another article called The Limits of Libertarianism, which sounds ominous, but is not as ominous as as it sounds. I've got a couple that I'm working on. For example, N.T. Wright and Michael Byrd were recently interviewed. They've recently written a book called Jesus and the Powers, and Michael Byrd was interviewed by Doug Stewart for the LCI official podcast, main podcast. So it's a really interesting book that I think is wrong in some places. I think it's biblical theology of the powers, I think, is off in some ways. And ultimately it kind of ventures into just kind of the, I don't know what you call liberal democratic, you know, viewpoint, which I think is sort of insufficient, especially in dealing with Christian nationalism. I'm working on a sort of a response to that. And I just started jotting down some ideas for an article on that I'm calling Individual or Collective Rewards and Punishments in the Bible, because I've always thought it was really interesting from a libertarian perspective. We tend to be individualists, but there are definitely communal and collective aspects of scripture. So I was wanting to kind of explore that theme a little bit more.
Yeah, no, that's definitely an important theme. I mean, that's something that ties into a lot of things in current events. You know, even like I talk a lot on my podcast. I've been doing a lot of content aimed at things going on in the world, like things going on in Israel and America's role in terms of our foreign policy and military aid and things like that. And just kind of getting into the ideas of, like, you know, should Christians support concepts of collective punishment and whatnot? And that can be a little you know, at first glance, when you're kind of doing an overview of what the Bible teaches, looking at like the Old Testament wars and God's dealing with certain peoples, it can be a little bit confusing to navigate that. So I think that is important stuff to be covering and looking into for sure. Norman, what have you been doing, Mr. Doctor, and your TARDIS traveling around in time and relative dimension and space?
Well, simultaneously, not a lot, but a ton. So really my primary means of contribution of content right now is the Faith Ventures podcast. And we've been doing, you know, kind of going gangbusters on that. We've got now, if you're not familiar with that podcast, it's one of our most recent additions to the show lineup and involves really talking about the amazing stories of Christians doing business for the glory of God. Because a lot of times we're really good at talking about the evils of the state and the problems of tyranny and all of those things, which we are very good at doing. We're talking about those sorts of things and decrying tyranny and oppression and so on. That's great. But we're also very interested in the goodness and wealth that is being generated through the marketplace. And so Faith Ventures is really about the integration of faith and work. Let's tell those stories of great Christians who are doing great things for the glory of God. And therefore we're bringing in basically anybody who's interested. We can reach out all the time to new people and try to find people who these values resonate with. And so we've talked to everybody from, you know, people in marketing to investors. We just last week had the rather well-known Robert Netzley on the podcast. He's the founder of Inspire Investing, which is a firm that deals in what's called biblically responsible investing. That's a very interesting concept, and it's not one that I necessarily even agree with entirely, but it's a perspective that is well worth putting out there as a way of thinking about how we interact with our investments, even. And again, to the glory of God. So it is an opportunity to learn about what people are doing in their careers. It's a way of learning about the way in which people are interacting and integrating their faith inside their work. We've brought people from all over the map for the podcast, and we will continue to do so. Our next one coming up, which is nobody even knows about this yet, but we have a gentleman who is involved in fintech, which is a group called Pro Life Payments, which is really interesting, especially given the kind of concerns that we have these days about the way in which banking and fintech has actually been censoring people. And this is not as prominent in the United States, but it's on the horizon. We've seen in Europe people get debanked and people get censored off platforms in payment platforms and whatnot, and be unable to transact. And that does happen here in the United States even as well. And there's a risk then. So having agnostic payment processors, for instance, is actually a real concern. Anyway, so that's coming up. We're going to be talking about that. We've got more folks coming. And it's really exciting. And if you're interested in talking about the way that you integrate your faith in your work, then we would actually be really interested in talking to you. So contact us at, podcast@libertarianchristians.com, and we may be able to set something up. We'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really interesting point that, like, and people don't think about how, and this is, it's tough, right? Because we as Christians and libertarians focus a lot on talking about the state, and we generally say the free market's good, but while the state exists, the state and state actors and authoritarian actors can certainly weaponize what are generally good market forces and kind of create problems. I mean, this was definitely a problem during the COVID saga, and
it goes back to the Bush years, right? To stop capitalism in order to save it, sort of stuff.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I remember Bob Murphy interviewed Owen Benjamin, who is a little bit out there, but Owen was kind of sharing. He was like, well, one of the reasons I'm not libertarian is because all the markets canceled me, and I couldn't have a PayPal, and I couldn't use all these different services, and the only ones I could use were the state services. And of course, I think that's not a good reason to say we need
not
the state.
Not a particularly good reason. Yeah.
Because it's actually, the reasons that those market things canceled you is not really out of a pure market outcome. It was kind of state censorship involved in that. Yeah. But no, that's certainly very interesting. And Faith Ventures is a Yeah, definitely been an exciting thing to see launched, because I think that as much as we want to hear stories about Christians standing up to authoritarianism in the States, also just good to talk about how our faith does lead us to clash with things in the culture, or lead us to come up with you know, solutions and innovations in the market as well. So we need to be giving those you know, sharing those stories, I think, to kind of help showcase the values of both, you know, the gospel message and also and libertarian principles.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, as well, one of the primary hypotheses of the show, if you will, why do we do this? Is that if we agree as libertarians together, as Christian libertarians together, that the primary means outside of the church itself that God provides for his people and for the world, for human flourishing, and that is through the free market, then we need to be on board with telling those stories and letting people know how good we, in some sense, how good we really have it. Because God has created us with a win-win world right in front of us. And all we have to do is act peacefully within it and try to create value for other people as we go throughout our lives. And if we do that, we're making people better off. And we're that is how we serve other people. It is a misnomer to think that service only happens in a one-sided manner. Like, this free exchange is an act of service to each other. And so that's a great thing we need to remember, and we need to trumpet that. And so, you know, and especially from my point of view as well, like, I'm a professional scientist and engineer by trade. You know, this is my bread and butter too. I'm excited that I've got, you know, a couple of engineers who've come and been on the show, and I'm at some point I'll probably do something with Matt Bellis, who's part of our crew as well. One of our other podcast hosts, and maybe we'll do some talk together about what he's done, and then what I've done even in the free marketplace, and talk about those sorts of things. So that's on the horizon too. It's coming. Don't know when, you know, don't hold your breath, but we're doing the best we can on it.
I was going to say real quick, Norman, I like what you said about the market. That's something I've written about a little bit and thought a little bit about, which is that we tend to think that, like, somehow the government doing something, taking my money and giving it to someone else is more holy or righteous or good. And that the market is, you know, transactional in a bad way, but it's mutual. It's, you know, I there's something that I, you know, that I'm giving you that's a value to you. And there's something that's a value to me that you're giving me. And, mm-hmm. and there's no violence required. And so I think we sell that short when we, I think, view that in a purely transactional sense.
Yeah. Free exchange it can be both transactional and relational. The beauty of the marketplace is that it can be both, and you can almost polarize it a little bit, and both sides are okay. That's what we have to remember. You know, I think that is a classical error. I think that a lot of folks who are kind of, they criticize that, you know, rightly, they worry about consumerism and greed and so on and so forth. And they get so concerned about that. But they point to the wrong solution or the wrong, you know, like, yeah, the wrong solution for the problem, instead of that it's a part of the human heart that's the issue. They tend to only point to the system. And so that's a whole other thing we could get into, though. That's another ball of wax, as they say.
No, that's good. I also want to take a second here just for those of our LCI cohorts who are not here, just to plug some of the things that they are doing. Actually, it's funny. So, like, we looking at, like, our group LCI calendar to see what everyone's up to. And it's funny how things will often coincide. Cody mentioned how he's doing content pertaining to, you know, things that I'm going to be talking about, you know, in terms of, like, free speech, you know, cancel culture and whatnot. And then also, I recently did a live stream with Lisa Watson, who's part of the Herzog Foundation, and they're a Christian organization that's working on trying to, you know, make it easier for Christians to pull their kids out of public schools and give them, you know, resources and training even to either do homeschool or create Christian private schools or Christian micro schools and stuff, and getting churches involved in this. And that's really cool. And Alex's episode this week, episode 116 of the Protestant Libertarian Podcast, is entitled "Public Schools Are Designed to Indoctrinate Students." So whether you're listening to my show or Alex's show, you're getting a little bit of education as to the ways in which state education, you know, just kind of pales in comparison. Even the best examples of state education are going to pale in comparison to what free market solutions are able to provide. And so that's a little plugging of what I've done, what Alex has done. And then I also, I want to plug, actually, Cody, you recently did an interview with Greg Baus from the Reformed Libertarians podcast, talking about just what it means to be Reformed and Libertarian. And that was a really, really great conversation, which I recommend people checking out. I think Reformed Libertarians has been on a bit of a hiatus, but I think they'll be creating new content again here soon. Looks like in May, they're scheduled to kind of get back into the rotation. And then Carrie's also reopening her, I wanted to plug this for her. She's reopening her Liberty seminar, which I've actually had her on my show a couple months ago to talk about that, which she teaches classes on the Socratic method. And no, this isn't about learning how to debate people. It's actually a way, you know, she teaches classes on how the Socratic method can be used in all areas of life, can be used in our business pursuits, can be used you know, in theological study, it can be used in all sorts of things. And so, a lot of things. So we got a lot of things going on. We got a lot of, a lot of irons in the fire, as the saying goes. So, we're definitely busy.
One quick thing about the Greg Baus, that was on kind of an individual podcast that I have, that's not on a part of LCI, called Cantus Firmus. So if you look up Greg Baus or Cantus Firmus, you might be able to find it. It was a really fun conversation. It kind of started because, Greg, of course, you know, being a really reform guy, and I come from a more Anabaptist perspective. I had kind of written an article where I was kind of teasing out the idea that there might be some connections between kind of Reformed theology and coercion, which from an Anabaptist perspective makes sense. And so I was like, well, why don't you look at this and tell me what you think, Greg? And so he was giving me a lot of, you know, sort of feedback and critique. And I was like, okay, well, let's turn this into a conversation, because I'd like to actually hear you make a strong case for Reformed libertarianism. And I think you did a good job.
Yeah. And I'm, I'm Reformed as well, but I'll remind Greg and Carrie, because it's like I try to on the Biblical Anarchy podcast represent like a more mere Christianity sort of perspective. It's like we already had the Reformed Libertarians podcast, so like you guys need to be as Reformed as you can, and I have to try to like not wear my Reformed hat necessarily all the time. Yeah. Although I try to be honest about my biases, yeah. But
you're small R Reformed, at least in public.
Yeah, I'm a small right. There's big R and small R, just like there's big L and small L. That's good. All right. Well, I think this is a good opportunity. Actually, I was looking. We have some comments here. Just making sure everyone, if you're watching, if you have any questions, and it can be anything, whether it's something we're talking about or just, you know, anything pertaining to libertarianism or Christianity, just, you know, random thoughts, throw them out there and we will answer your questions. I see the feminist misogynist made a comment saying she works in the public school system as a Christian and it's very hard. And yeah, I mean, more power to you. I mean, it's you're doing the Lord's work if you're a Christian in a public school right now, trying to stay true to the message, you know, your values as a Christian and you know, in that kind of environment. Actually, I'll take this opportunity to plug one more thing before we get into a conversation we're going to have tonight. Next Thursday, so that'll be the 18th, I will actually be doing a X Spaces with the feminist misogynist, and we're going to be talking about Romans 13 and should Christians always submit to the government? That's the topic of that Spaces. So definitely, if that's something that you want to hear about or participate in or ask questions in, follow me on X and you'll be able to get notifications and see that when it happens. All right. So now that we're done, you know, patting ourselves on the back for all the cool things we got going on, we're here to talk about something that actually our Cody here made a nice little image for, which I'm going to put up on the screen here. I got to remove the banners covering it up. StreamYard has betrayed us with the return of Christian nationalism. I'm covering myself up to show you this. So for those of you who have been following us for a while, you know that last year when we were at Freedom Fest, back in July, Memphis, Tennessee, we were creating all sorts of content on Christian nationalism, including at Freedom Fest itself. Norman was up on the stage with I'm blanking on names here. Nick Gillespie. I wanted to call him Norman Gillespie. I was like, no, your name is Norman.
Yep.
Nick Gillespie. I'm fusing you guys together in my brain. Nick Gillespie from Reason Magazine and
Ryan Kaplan from GMU.
Ryan Kaplan. And there was one other guy. What's his name?
And that would be Rich Lowry, who is the editor of National Review.
Right. So you guys had a conversation on nationalism, and then we did a breakout session on Christian nationalism. And I was sort of like moderating that, and we had Carrie giving a reform perspective. We had Alex, who wasn't able to make it in person, but he was able to kind of stream in with a recording, give a presentation on his reading of The Case for Christian Nationalism by Stephen Wolfe. We had Ryan McMakin giving a Catholic perspective, and then Norman finishing up the session by preaching.
I did get to preaching a little bit, didn't I?
A little preaching, which is good. So I definitely recommend going back and watching that stuff if you didn't. But Christian nationalism as a broad concept and an idea, and the people who are involved in that have been talked about a bit more frequently in the news lately. I think some of it has to do with like the Christ is King sort of trending on social media, which happened after Candace Owens left the Daily Wire. And that's a mess because it's like, Christ is King. And, we say that here at LCI loud and proud, right? I mean, that's the whole
thing. We've been saying that for 10 years.
Yeah. Man. Like Doug's not here with his hat where it says, Jesus is Lord and Jesus crossed out, and Caesar's crossed out above it. It's like, that's an essential part of the message of the Bible and the gospel. But there are some, and I don't think it's like there we go. Cody's coming in with the save there. There are some people who use that phrase and are attaching some things to it that I don't quite agree with. I don't think anyone up here would agree with. I mean, go to the extreme far end of the spectrum here. You'd have people like, Nick Fuentes, who are like, yeah, Christ is King, but also America first. And that means we need to, have blasphemy laws, and we need to have Sabbath laws, and all sorts of other stuff. And then there's a whole spectrum of people in between it. I was actually recently on someone else's podcast, and they asked me this question, but I'm going to pose it to you guys. When people are, talking about these different things, and Christian nationalism comes up, like, how do we even define it? Because it seems like that's part of the battle when we talk about anything is like, what do we even define these terms at? So like, what is Christian nationalism? Does it have a set definition, or is it a spectrum of different things? How do you answer that when someone asks you? Norman, do you want to go first?
Yeah. So this is actually one of the principal questions on some level, that there are multiple narratives at play here. One of which is the very false one. Well, there's multiple false narratives, really. There's the one that is kind of getting propagated through the media, where pretty much anything that involves the idea of trying to talk about Jesus as Lord and the state is bad, anything to that level these are just Christian nationalists now. So it's you've even seen articles written to the effect of, well, we're all Christian nationalists now. And that's just not the case. So it's almost like I hate to put it this way, but it's almost like a psyop is going on, where they're trying to kind of import these ideas into what we're trying to promote in a manner that's just completely and utterly false. But there is, and so there's the false media narrative about it, but there is something very wrong about what is the Christian nationalism proper, which is the stuff that is getting promulgated by Andrew Torba, your Stephen Wolfe, your William Wolfe. I think it's James Lindsay likes to call them Wolfe the Younger and Wolfe the Elder. I can't remember which one's which. It doesn't really matter. They're both terrible, and so on. And there's many folks who have been, very even more as active as we are, even in talking about this and trying to dispel some of these problematic ideas. Folks like Michael O'Fallon, Cody Leibolt's out there on X, doing good work as well, and others, plenty of others as well. and trying to dispel what it is, like the false aspects of what people are trying to say. This, like, you know, when you see on The View or some other random leftist talk show that that somebody who says that natural rights come, you know, are derived from our creator, our God, that's just Christian nationalism. I mean, come on, are we crazy here? So, you know, so there's issues like that. Going back though, let's loop back it to the original question, like how do you define it? A Christian nationalist is kind of a, if you will, a soft theonomist or a revisited theonomist, one who sees what is going on around us and many of the problems that we will identify as problems as well, but says that the answer is not that we need to get the government out as much as possible to reduce the power of the state, to get rid of these institutions that are causing us all of these problems, but rather Christianize them in a certain way. And you'll even see, for instance, Stephen Wolfe talk about how we need the Christian prince, which is baffling to me that he would even hazard that we need to get Machiavellian on it. But it's remarkable. And as well as instituting things like blasphemy laws and whatnot. And I would even go as far to say that this is almost like the pendulum swing over. These are wokest Christians in so many respects, because they see all of the moral, problems around us and say, well, you know what? We need to get the government to come and deal with it. And so it's moral busybodyism. I mean, it's wokeism come to Christianity on some level in a different sort of way, because the woke left wants to do the same thing. It's just in their own certain way. So that's I'm going to stand on that for now and let Cody go on and go with it from there.
Yeah. So I happen to, the definitions are always tough. So you have to like stop and think, okay, how do I like summarize this? And it just so happens, I wrote a book called Christian Nationalism, A Biblical Response. So I had my notes handy when you asked that question. So Norm going first helped me to grab my notes.
he can correct all my misunderstandings.
No. I'll start with where Norm did, that there are certain things that it's not, that it sometimes gets applied to. There was recently a pundit on, I don't know, maybe CNN or MSNBC that was basically arguing. She was basically arguing that Christian nationalism is the idea that rights come from God and not the state. And that just like blew me away.
Have you heard of this thing called the Declaration of Independence now?
Right.
You recall that little document, kind of important historically?
And it's also, so anyway, yeah, apparently her view, if she thinks it through, is really just totalitarianism. But anyway, it's also not that Christianity has influenced the Western tradition. There, I think, are kind of two basic principles that seem to come up in Christian nationalism as it's presented, and especially as it's articulated in the statement on Christian nationalism and the gospel, and also in Stephen Wolfe's The Case for Christian Nationalism. The first is that a nation should seek to actively present as Christians in the laws and customs that it creates and enforces. And the second point is that such a nation should also embrace nationalism. So they're not, it's not just that your nation should look Christian, but you actually have a view of what your nation is. And that tends to include a strong separation of nations and enforcement of restrictive immigration policies. So you're going to notice that pretty consistently. It also usually comes with an over-realized eschatology, a certain kind of post-millennialism that Christ has sort of already conquered. He's already king in the sense that, like, we, you know, premillennialists think he will be. And so the law should reflect that. Generally, there's also kind of a theonomy, like a reapplication of the law of Moses. And also, you know, when this is, I think, common with statism in general, the idea that if something is bad, it should be illegal. And I guess the distinction I would make, the reason why I think Christ as king is so confusing, because a Christian nationalist or a Christian anarchist could both say it. So obviously there's something that's unclear. And I think when a Christian nationalist says Christ as king, there's an implied word that they leave out, which is Christ is a king. And whereas I think the Christian anarchist or Christian libertarian would say no king but Christ, which I think is something that a Christian nationalist couldn't affirm.
Yeah.
So I want to share. So I think I would agree with you guys. Like, it's a good starting, you know, kind of like explaining what Christian nationalism is. I mean, there's different flavors of it, right? And kind of a spectrum of sorts. And yeah, I also read Stephen Wolfe's book, and there's some there's some funny quotes in there to be sure. I thank you for that. For that privilege.
we'll pray for you. You're healing.
Well, but so what's funny is my wife is about like 6 months pregnant, I'm just being reminded of that quote, because you know she's breastfeeded each one of our kids, and I keep reminding her. Now remember, as Stephen Wolf said, in the case of Christian nationalism, breastfeeding our children is not just good for the baby, but it's a national duty. And I am not making that up. That is in the book.
I don't want to do that thing where you just compare somebody you don't like to Hitler, but that's like 100% like a Hitler thing to say. You know, we have to create strong Aryan men for
breastfeeding.
Yeah. Well, it's like you don't want to lean into that meme necessarily, but at the same time, like what I did when I introduced our breakout session, well, I literally just took like a bunch of random quotes and asked the audience, all right, which authoritarian dictator is this? And really, it was like, is that Mao? Is that Stalin? And I was like, wait, actually, no, these are all from Stephen Wolf in the case for Christian nationalism. It's like, that's not good.
And you even see now, like these Christian nationalists are even beginning to on Twitter. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but like admiring vocally folks like the fascist Franco from Italy, and you know back in those days, and just enforced certain types of laws that these same Christian nationalists would approve of, things like blasphemy laws and whatnot. It's like, well, this can't be that bad, can it? It's just remarkable how almost like tone deaf, and it's so bizarre that you like, you have to start asking some really like odd questions, like, all right, where are you guys really going with this? And then you find out, of course, oh, there's a bunch of anonymous accounts that are doing this. And so you start wondering, like, okay, how much are you for real? How much are you trolling? How much are you trying? Like, how much of this is you begin to wonder, is like, what level of psyop is this? Like, who is on to this?
As you've said before, it's like, and it can be tough to discern this from trolling, but there's also kind of a bit of a Mott and Bailey thing going on where, it's, I mean, it, and I, you know, sometimes it's like the trolling is kind of like, you know, they'll freak you out with like this, like, oh, no, we don't want that. We just want Sabbath laws and blasphemy. Yes.
I just oppose leftism like you do.
Okay. Well, that's a perfect. Like that. So that's a perfect segue to, so I have a, I'm going to share my screen here. Give me a second, pop this up. But so like, this is kind of where I think part of what is motivating this sort of trend too, not just like recent headlines and things with Candace Owens and the Daily Wire, but even someone like Trump, I think, has contributed a lot to this phenomenon. And he's encouraging things that, although I kind of understand what he's saying, the way he is, you know, rhetorically contributing to this is not helpful. So he, you know, Trump did recently say, as a CNN article kind of responds here, he's basically implied and said that Christianity is it was basically under attack in our country, and there is certainly an appeal, I think, to Christian nationalism that stems largely from the fact that our culture, insofar as it has turned, you know, very much away from being Christ-centered to being led by these different ideologies coming out of you know, the secular institutions. You see a lot of stuff, you know, people will call it woke or just social progressivism, but, you know, pushing, you know, heavily on sexual promiscuity and pushing certain things about gender on children, and doing that through public schools, like we talked about earlier. A lot of Christians are feeling like, okay, well, what are we supposed to do? Nothing? Like, what should our response be? And like, so if you're going to like steel man the Christian nationalist position, it's basically like, well, you know, the state exists and institutions exist, and they're going to promote a worldview, and we can, you know, it's never going to promote nothing. And so we have a choice. Like, do you want these institutions to promote this secular garbage and have that stuff be used to come after Christians and to persecute the churches? Or should we be in charge of these institutions? Because that's the only other option. So that's kind of, I think, the basis of their argument. And unfortunately, I think it's persuasive to a large number of Christians who that kind of gets their, it tickles their ear a little bit. It's like, well, no, I don't want the left to run these institutions. So yeah, I guess we do need to, you know, have Christian nationalism, because that's the only other option, right, Norman?
Well, I will take issue with saying a large number. I don't think that this is some sort of like massively grow. Maybe it is fast growing. Well, I mean, but it's on like it's so minority position already that I'm not like worried about it and in taking power or whatnot. I'm more concerned about the effect that it is having on our faith. That our fellow Christians that are around us who are buying into it are definitely, you know, at risk. In
there's also a bit of like mission creep and like Overton window effect. Like the more, because I would agree, like, is the majority of American Christianity becoming infatuated with Christian nationalism wholesale? Mm-hmm. No, but the extent to which it has grown and its influence exists, it's pulling everything a little bit that direction, I fear.
Yeah, there's a gravity well sort of.
Yes.
It's like that pull is there. And in part, it's because it's so outlandish in a sense. But then that goes back to the second part of your question, in some sense, like this is the only option. And that's a false dichotomy that is getting sold. It's either you know, this the post liberal in the liberal in the good sense, or you know, order, and it needs to go back to this authoritarian way, or you're gonna get this side of authoritarianism, or you're gonna get this side of authoritarianism. Don't you want this one? And that's the false dichotomy that you don't need to buy. It's the same sort of thing that, like, it, just from a different angle of like, What did we talk about, you know, in the after 9/11 with respect to things like, you know, well, we got to be secure, so we need to have things like the Patriot Act in order to protect us from the terrorists, and so on and so forth. And then we bought the lie, and then we just kept getting, you know, pushed down that alleyway and until we've been, you know, just repeatedly abused, and now we're just used to it, right? Now we're used to all of the stuff that the Patriot Act has foisted upon us. Now we're used to not being able to go through the airport like normal human beings, and so on and so forth. And now we're used to the fact that SWAT teams are everywhere, and so on and so forth. Like, all these things are, you know, that's your mission creep, right? But it's sold on the false dichotomy of security and safety.
Yeah.
And versus liberty.
Yeah.
And one thing I was going to add, I mean, my primary concern is what it's Christian nationalism is doing to the church.
Yeah.
But I think another thing is most people don't, I don't know. I don't want to say this. Most people don't think their views, they feel them. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, if you were to ask somebody, are you a Christian nationalist? You know, it's sort of asking somebody, asking a Baptist, are you a dispensationalist? Like, you know, probably a majority of them that don't even know what that means. But if you sort of talk to them about eschatology, they'd sort of say, oh yeah, I believe that. And I think there's something like that with Christian nationalism, where it kind of does creep in to, you know, sort of more conservative Christian culture in ways that, you know, they wouldn't.
I'm a Christian and I love my country.
Yeah. You know, God, guns and, you know, the flag kind of
stuff. Rock and roll. Oh, wait, right. That's a different one. That's a different one, right? Oh, yeah.
So I think that's my concern. Not necessarily that most Christians are out there, you know, reading Stephen Wolfe, but that these sort of ideas are creeping in. And I think the fact that we're already, so many of us have bought into this idea that anything that's good needs to be legislated, and anything that's bad needs to be illegal, and is part of the problem that we sort of. So, if someone is, you know, leaning to the right, I think they're leaning into that to some extent, just because they've already accepted violence. They're mm-hmm. probably sort of religiously informed, and they want to sort of fight off the left wing, you know, blue hairs at the gate, and so I think. Even if, I guess what I'm just saying is Christian nationalism, I think, in one way, has been made into a boogeyman that's been exaggerated. But on the other hand, it does have an influence, even if it's not, you know,
mm-hmm.
intellectually understood by those people who hold to it in some way.
Yeah, and I guess someone asked what our definition is of Christian nationalism. I guess they might have tuned in a little late to hear us answer it. But so if you go back a little bit, Craig, you'll kind of hear us define it a little bit. But it's a lot of different things. But yeah, I think it is born out of, you know, ultimately this sort of you know, it's like many things. It's reactionary to some extent, but I think the question then that is, what are we proposing as the alternative? Like, if the Christian nationalists are wrong, I would certainly, so like, to give the devil his due, right? And I talk about this in an upcoming episode. No movement, no matter how, like, any movement that's even a little bit successful is successful because there has to be like a little kernel of something true, or at least like true in a sense, for yeah, people to even be attracted to it, right?
Devil puts forward a lot of half-truths, right?
Right. Like, this is true for even the most evil ideology that ever existed. Like, even if we look at, like, Nazi Germany, what led to Hitler rising to power, what led to people supporting that regime, was that there were a lot of issues in that country, and the Nazis came around and, you know, been like, here are the look at all these problems. Here are the solutions. Obviously, their solutions were beyond the pale and horrible and evil and countered everything we stand for. But there were legitimate grievances that the people were motivated by that the Nazis were able to hone in on. And mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, the Christian nationalists are rightly saying, why are Christians taking a backseat in the culture? Why are we letting these secular institutions and these left ideologies just run amok? And like, they're saying, the to the extent that the evangelical church has basically, you know, been happy to relegate itself to the back stages of society just to be pummeled on, they're like, well, we don't think that's true Christianity. And I would agree with them. I don't think that's true Christianity either. But then, like, okay, so we, it's like, if I to steal, like, to be charitable to them, like, if I agree with them on the problem, then what is the solution? How can we as Christians, instead of taking a back seat to in the culture and allow these institutions to be, you know, run by people who are going to promote things counter to our values, what then is the solution to these problems that the Christian nationalist is keying in on? Is it an open-ended question to either one of you? Don't both go at once.
I was wanting to hear Norm's thoughts on that. How do we resolve some of these issues? I mean, I guess the one thing I would say we don't do is that we don't want to become just as violent, just as evil, but on the other side. And I think tends to be the solution that I hear the most. And I'm just really not satisfied with that at all. I'm not satisfied with it from a Christian perspective. I'm not satisfied with it, of course, from a libertarian perspective. And, you know, I understand sometimes you have to be sort of pragmatic, about how you, you know, deal with particular issues as they come up, but, I'm not so pragmatic that I'm going to say, well, you know, I like the blue hair is better than the, you know, the Trump flag waivers, or I like the Trump flag waivers better than the blue hair, so that's who I'm going to side with. So I think, to me, I mean, part of, I think, how we respond to it is, I think we do need to, I think, take this out of the realm of force and start really advocating for libertarian principles. I think we need to change the conversation. I think we need to kind of look at people and say, you know, you're basically telling me I need to hand a gun to this maniac or this maniac, and those are my only two choices. There's got to be a better choice than that.
Right. Well, it's almost like what the Christian nationalist is getting wrong is that they have let the world set the rules of the game.
Ding, ding, like, ding.
Like, the game is force. Might makes right. Who's going to win? It's like, wait, is that the game that we're supposed to be playing as Christians? Why did you just accept that premise that's all that there is?
Yeah.
I'm not here to tell you that Christian nationalists are just not Christians. They can be our brothers and sisters and yet be profoundly wrong. But I think it is incumbent upon us.
Right. Just like everyone who's not Reformed.
Yeah. Okay. Got us. Got us. All right. No, but, getting back to that,
You just derailed me.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. No, it's just funny. We have to, it's incumbent on us as Christians, as we learn how to take on being an apprentice of Jesus, to change our relationship with power. Okay. This is foundational ultimately to who we are as Christians. It doesn't mean that you can't be saved if you don't figure this out, but this right. is the next level of spiritual formation. If you believe that it is incumbent on you to force people into adhering to everything that you are and conforming to you, then you have got a problem. And that is what they're trying to do. They're not really trying to force people to be like Jesus. They're really not. You look at them and they're not. It's evident. What they're trying to do is force them to be like them. Okay. Be like, if I'm doing that, I'm forcing you to be like me. And that is a profoundly unscriptural, unbiblical, ungodlike quality. So we have to change our relationship to power to begin with. And as long as we don't, then you're actually missing out on a very profound part of your relationship with God too. And so yeah. I would implore them to look at the Gospels in a different way. I would to take on the there's my mother there. She taught me well. What can I say? I would implore them to get back into the Scripture, to look, to go to the renewing of their mind, to really think about what it means that Jesus came to seek and save what is lost, and not to serve, not to be served, but to serve. And that, like, if you begin to just inculcate that into your brain, then you're going to not end up in those types of positions. So right. I don't understand why this is not fully evident to people, because I think there are many people who are not Christian nationalists and try to talk about stuff from, say, the more conservative Christian right at times, folks who I think have great things to say at times. People like, you know, Eric Metaxas, they're still making these kinds of errors. It's just in a lighter fashion. And as long as they think that the answer to their problems is going to be at the point of the government sword, then they're not going to get the results that they feel like that they want. And in fact, it's going to have a completely antithetical consequence as well. It's going to look more like Nazi Germany and not less like Eric Metaxas kind of wants to talk about. And it disturbs me. To no end. And, Eric, please, let's talk about this, brother. Like, you can do better than this.
Oh, there are great men of the faith who are, you know, maybe not full-blown Christian nationalists, but they're definitely going down that road, or even some that have gone. Like I, as a Reformed Christian, I'm a fan of James White and Jeff Durbin and Apologia Church. And to their credit, they have been good. And sometimes the Christian nationalist and the theonomist types can be good on certain things when it sure. comes to responding to the excesses of the state. Like, I remember during the lockdowns that Apologia Church, James White, Durbin, and a lot of other Reformed pastors were, you know, some of the people out there who were the, you know, the loudest saying, like, mm-hmm. no, we're not going to let you tell us that we can't meet.
Yeah, but they don't learn the right lessons from it. They don't, their instincts are correct in that regard, but they don't take it to the next right. level and approach it and learn it learn the right lessons.
And it's even so some sad. Of that, well, it's like, and sometimes they'll say the right things, but then not think them the whole way through. Like, I was yeah. listening. So I went back and re-listened to a sermon that Jeff Durbin gave 3 years ago called No King But Christ. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot in that that I disagree with, but I was like, I'm hearing him talk today, and he's kind of become way more, you know, Christian nationalism-y or whatever the right nationalist-y in his rhetoric. And I was like, okay, how did you get from 3 years ago to now? I was like, I went back. I was like, let me go back, listen to that sermon, and see like if I can catch like maybe things I missed at the time that were like, oh, this was like creeping under the surface, and I didn't realize how, but. You know, it wasn't quite there. And I remember, so I actually remember the first time I watched Jeff Durbin, he was protesting abortion on the street, and the cops mm-hmm. came and like pulled him off. And he, I remember like I fell in love with him as a, you know, Christian activist at that point, because he literally said, "You are a thug, sir. You are not a servant of God. You are a thug." And I was like, Yes.
That's,
like, you get it. And then, like, when he gave the No King But Christ sermon, I was like, yes, he gets it. And now he's like, okay, we need
a Christian prince.
And I'm just like, but what he said at that sermon 3 years ago, the No King But Christ one, he said that, you know, our job as Christians is, you know, because he takes a post-millennial view, and I'm more of an amillennialist, but he's like, you know, we're to be disciples to the nations, and we're to reconcile the nations to Christ. And I was like, yes, I agree with that. But I'm like, oh, the error he's making is he thinks that the state is a normative way of bringing people of bringing the nations to Christ. And I was like, you not remember that little part where Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world? Like, you not remember the thing you said, Norm, where he's like, don't be like the Gentiles who want to seek positions of power to rule over one another and exercise their authority over them, but rather, just as I came to serve, you need to serve. And it's like, how do we grow? Like, listen, we should be growing the kingdom of God. We should be trying to bring the gospel message to the world. But what's the example Jesus gave? It wasn't the sword. It was the opposite of that.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. I'm gonna harken back to Cody talking about, you know, he's got an article that he's thinking about writing and about collective versus individual action, even. And it'll be interesting to kind of see, because I think there's some kind of foundational errors that people make even in this regard as to what should be as considered as collective action and what should be acted out in a collective versus individually. I think there's some really interesting kind of things to consider in that aspect. And a lot of the problems that these Christian nationalists, you know, kind of put forward are things that they believe should be acted out in collective action, which should not at all. And that's a classic error, you know, all over the place throughout human history, because we are communal in many respects, right? And we are drawn to communities. And we want that. We desire it, and it's part of who we are. Even in our own LCI's, you know, core values, we talk about how we do value the idea of strong institutions. That doesn't mean institutions of power. It means that we need clubs and churches and civic groups and things that act in community all over the place. But when you start replacing that with, well, you know what, we need this and this position of power and this position of power, and it's going to regulate this, and it's blah, blah, blah. And then you begin to, you know, devolve into the real anarchy, the real chaos. I shouldn't say anarchy. I should say what people sometimes want to characterize as anarchy. That's really chaotic at that point, when you just have a bunch of people acting with the will to power rather than a will to serve.
Yeah. We confuse communal action with force. I think it was, was it Hillary Clinton who said that government are the things we do together?
Yes.
Right now, the government.
We need, you know, that meme of a Batman slapping Robin. We need to replace. No. So yeah, it needs to be Rothbard with Anatomy of the State going no to
no. Hillary Clinton. Real quick, I don't know if I answered the question about what Christians should do in these situations. We kind of talked a little bit about what we shouldn't do, and Norm, I think, filled that out a little bit, but. I guess my answer would be that I think we should be trying to weaken the state. We should be trying to remove as much as possible any areas where force can be used against us. And then at that point, we're just talking about voluntary society, you know, voluntary organizations and businesses and people and communities that are sort of, you know, some might lean a little bit left. We might not like that. Some may lean a little bit more right. We may not like that. But once we remove force from the equation, then once we're left with persuasion. And I think insofar as, you know, we're not able to do that, I do think there's room to create like alternative institutions. I feel like one place where people, I think on the right, get this a little bit more is with the school choice thing. They're not saying, you know, no, we need to take over the public schools and force, you know, everybody to stand up and pledge allegiance to Trump every morning. They're saying, no, we just want to be able to, you know, homeschool or have, you know, private school and let that really be an option to us. Take that money that you're taking from us, give it back, and we'll use it for our own child's education in ways that we think are more appropriate. And that's still not entirely libertarian because you still have taxation going on, but I think it's at least a step in the right direction.
So this is not the time and place to have this conversation necessarily, but I would love to at some point because I think partly what helps answer this is the, I don't think it has to be exclusively Reformed, but it is associated with Reformed theology, is the idea of sphere sovereignty. And I know Norm's had some questions about that. But I think, because like once you realize that, like, to me, it's like libertarian principles of division of labor. And I'm like, I think God has ordered different parts of society to be relegated to the things that they're relegated to. Like parental authority is a real thing, right? Like we're not against authority. We understand the biblical prescriptions of what those authorities are and what they're prescribed to and limited to. Like parents have authority over their children. Parents don't have authority over other parents' children though, right? And like if you had a school, even with a private school, the teacher has authority over the things pertaining to education, but doesn't have authority over things pertaining to like what the parents have authority over. And then this is the same thing with church and state. Like I think, and not really state, it should be as we define it in the great book right here, Faith Seeking Freedom, civil governance. Like there is the just use of force in pursuit of civil justice. And you can, there are people who will have authority to, you know, uphold property rights and adjudicate disputes, but their authority is for, if it's a civil authority, if it's the civil magistrate, they're delegated to civil matters, not to matters of like, you know, which theology is correct, or, you know, if people should worship on Sunday or on Saturday, or people should work on the Sabbath, right? So I think, you know, part of the problem is like we're not against the administration of governance, but we have to wrestle back away from this, the indoctrination of the state and of, you know, kind of like this modern ethos, the idea that the state is necessarily synonymous with governance, and that the state should be just like this weird, you know, entity that just like, you know, soaks into and consumes all areas of society. It's not what it's supposed to do.
What you're suggesting though, and where the Christian nationalists is going to kind of come in and try to interject there, is to then say, oh, you accept the fact that there might be a civil magistrate that needs to do X, Y, and Z. Well, I'm telling you, and I would, you know, as the Christian nationalist is going to tell you, they will argue that underneath that magistrate's authority is things like blasphemy laws and various other things.
Civil matters.
Well, I mean, but when they want to go out of their way and try to define them as civil matters, then that's how they're going to, that's how they try to rope it in. So you have to have a,
it'd be like, a lot of mental gymnastics. This is where I know they'll do it.
Like, and frankly, maybe Greg would go off on me on for saying so, but this is where I think sphere sovereignty doesn't answer the question. Okay. Like what does belong under that? You're saying a civil, well, if the Christian nationalist says, well, that's blasphemy laws are a civil matter. I'm sorry. You know, well, okay. Respond. Like you need a theory that is beyond that in order to say what's it within it. So I think that's where I'm somewhat in questioning. But at any rate, I think it's still, you're still correct though, in that this is like, there are limitations as to what should be and should not be as pertaining to what is adjudicated by by a court or an arbiter or so on.
Well, I mean, if we're going to have courts and law, they pertain to areas of human conflict over property. And I just don't see where I would need to see a Christian nationalist try to say, oh, the violating Sabbath is a violation of someone's property right or some kind of, violation of civil justice. So that would be that'd be an interesting conversation to.
Well, this is the kinds of stuff that they try to pull out in or.
Right.
You know, into their.
I just don't think that the logical argumentation is on their side.
I agree. I agree with that. But I think it is different though that like under certain types of rubrics, it fits within that Christian nationalist view. So we have to pull out something else in order to answer it. And I think answering the Christian nationalist both from the concordant philosophies of. What is proper from a natural rights point of view as to the purview and function of government, and also the theological point of view as to what the Bible says about what is appropriate for human behavior, you know, first and foremost, and then also how is a Christian to behave.
I also want to know just what their I want to know what their answer is to, like, the God having a covenant with the Jewish people and the small little land of Israel. They could not uphold these laws, and they would constantly disobey and turn away from God. So I'm like, what? The other thing is just
that's just a technical problem. We can do better now.
Real Christian nationalism hasn't been tried yet. You know,
do you see where this is going? It's wokeism come to Christianity.
But that's the thing. Like, they're playing. They don't realize they're playing the same game.
Yeah.
And it's just like, why should we play their game? That's, you know,
well, from their point of view, it's like, well, we're under assault and we can, but that's not the way that we are to behave as Christians. Like,
do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good.
If
only someone had said that in a,
if only somebody had implored that to us at some point in Christian history.
There's a question here. We can use this as kind of like the last point on this topic.
Oh, yeah, it's getting late.
By Raisa Browning. Who I will have on an upcoming episode, and I know he's also contributed a little bit to LCI as well. How should a Christian in a place of authority exercise it to make the government conform to Christ without becoming a despot? I think that is a great question. So, and there are multiple ways you could take this. Like, as a place of authority, I could take this two ways. Like, if you're a Christian who happens to find themselves in a position of political authority, how might you use that political authority in a way that that honors Christ? And then two, like, I also want to know, you know, one thing I think we should touch on as well, if we can briefly, is how can the church exercise its authority in a way to influence government in a way that is in concordance with biblical principles and is not just, you know, embracing a counter authoritarianism? Because I think that's those are kind of two things that that come to mind there. What do you think, Cody?
I come from a little bit more of an Anabaptist tradition. So we tend to be a little bit suspicious of the idea that Christians should be an authority, at least in the sense that they would be exercising force or violence on others. And so that would be part of my answer to that question. I'm a little bit softer on that question, but I guess what I would say is at the very least is tread lightly. but I think the second point that you brought up about how should the church be interacting in this topic, and maybe it's even relevant to the first part, is that I think generally speaking, our witness to the state should be to stop doing what they're doing. I think there might be like a few situations where it could get a little more complicated, like you know, should Christians in the 1850s and 60s been telling the government, well, you need to actively get involved and, you know, punish these slaveholders. So should Christians ever be telling the government to be more violent? There might be some, I think, borderline cases, gray areas where that could be a debatable point. But I would say, generally speaking, our witness should be, you know, stop hurting people. Stop using force. You need to get out of this. You shouldn't be doing this. This is wrong. And so I think generally speaking that whether you're a Christian who's in power or a Christian who's speaking to power, I would say that's usually going to be your best witness is that there probably are a lot of things they're doing that are completely illegitimate for them to be doing.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that part. Norm, what do you think? And also, what's your perspective on, you know, Christians, you know, holding political power? Is that if that's at all possible to do in a way that's Christ honoring?
Yeah. So to a first approximation, I think there's a I'm going to butcher the location of this verse, but I believe it was some soldier came to Jesus and asked what he was to do. And he said, and what did Jesus say? Like, well, treat people fairly and don't take what you shouldn't. And it's almost like, you know,
don't hurt people.
Don't hurt people. Don't take their stuff. that's a bit of a lighter way of describing it, and probably doing completely injustice. So Lord, forgive me. But at any rate, to a first approximation, if you find yourself in that position of power and you find yourself changing in your view of what this power is, then the first thing you need to be doing is like, yeah, tread lightly. Like, let's treat people fairly. Don't take what you shouldn't. you know, and then if I think the background to that is that we see through early church history is that people begin to exit that. So find a way to extricate yourself if you can. And if it may, I mean, as best you can. And then for those who are in, say, like, it's complicated though, when we start thinking about like, well, what about the elected representatives of today? How does representative government change the way that we think about this? And well, I mean, look at the good examples that we have. Let's look to folks like Ron Paul, look to folks like, you know, the lesser known David Simpson in Texas, who's no longer in the legislature. Thank the Lord. He has been saved from his own demise. David was great. And I mean, even folks like, you know, Tom Massey and Justin Amash and Rand Paul to an extent. And like these, there are reasonable examples out there, but you also need to, you know, be sensitive to your own conscience and start learning this stuff. Like, yeah, you can't, it's no, like Rothbard once said, it's like, it's no crime to be ignorant of economics, but it is a big problem if you loudly proclaim your ignoramus views, you know, and then be able to, and then worse still, he didn't say this way, but worse still is being able to act upon them. So I think knowing the limitations of your own knowledge there, like you, and then finding ways to diminish that effect. So that's one thing.
One thing I'll plug here, then we'll get to kind of like closing remarks here. But I actually did an episode for the Faith Seeking Freedom podcast at the end of last year on this subject, which is right here. Should Christians vote or hold office or focus on the gospel? And I won't give too much away of that because I want you to go listen to it. But I will say, just from my own personal experience, one thing that, because I actually ran for office once and won. But what's funny is that I'm an elected official, but I was never sworn in because I had questions about the swearing in portion of the thing. And I was like, you know, I'm, you know, like I'll swear to do what is right in the eyes of God. But if you want me to swear some kind of oath to, you know, a nation or a flag or a piece of paper, I'm not sure that my faith would allow me to do that. And then I've had crickets ever since whenever I try to reach back out to inquire about it. It was for a low level position that I,
probably shouldn't have existed.
It's for constable, which it's like, there are ways that like, so like, I actually like what I did. I think it's a good example of like, I filled a position that now it's not being used because I filled it and have effectively nullified it for 6 years by basically in an act of like civil disobedience, just kind of been like, not really disobedience exactly, but it's just kind of like I won and I'm saying I'm not going to do this because I don't believe in it. I'm also not going to swear but that's one of the things I bring up on that episode, is something we should be mindful of in politics, and this is something we've been talking a lot about in LCI. This relates to Preston Sprinkle's book, is you know, there's a matter of the question of what does our faith in Jesus Christ have to say about where our allegiances should be when we're looking at these, you know, these nation states and these political structures. And, you know, when Jesus says you can only serve, you know, you cannot serve two masters, and even has strong words to say about taking oaths and stuff, I just think the very least, are there things that you got to really think through and wrestle before you do anything. So,
yep.
Which kind of piggybacked on what you said, Norm. Guys, this has been so much fun. I wish we could go for like 2 more hours, but my wife would kill me. And I know, Norm, you got stuff you got to go to.
Yeah, we do.
But yeah, we're going to be doing more of these in the future. So we'll probably try to do at least one roundtable per month and probably have a different theme for each one. But this one with Christian nationalism, and I think we did a good job of at least, you know, covering the basic ground. And we have a lot more content both in the past and coming down the pipeline on that subject. So if you guys want more, there will be more. We will provide that. I want to just give you guys both, you know, any closing thoughts. And also if there's anything, you know, you want to plug that's coming down the pipeline that you just want to keep people to be mindful of before we sign off. Cody, you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah, I'd mention real quick for folks who are interested in resources from LCI on Christian nationalism. If you go to libertarianchristians.com and click books, there's a free ebook called The Idolatry of Statism. That's a book that I think was available at Freedom Fest last year, if I'm not mistaken, that you guys brought with you.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Alex at the Protestant Libertarian Podcast has done some number of episodes on Christian nationalism and also a couple articles for LCI. My favorite one was episode 65 because I was in it. The statement on Christian nationalism and the gospel was what we were discussing. If you're interested, I mentioned a book that I wrote, short book called Christian Nationalism, A Biblical Response. I wrote it partly because I was dissatisfied with a lot of the responses that were sort of in that kind of liberal democratic tradition. And I really felt like they tend to be sort of softly lean into Christian nationalism in unfortunate ways. And so I was trying to basically write a response that was from a Christian anarchist perspective, but also didn't use the words Christian anarchist. but that's also available. I'd be happy to send you a free PDF if you send me a message or an email. One more thing. My head's not actually this big. I'm just sitting close to the camera. So if you're comparing our head sizes, it's a distance thing.
Objects in camera might be closer than they appear. Awesome. Thanks, Cody. Norman, anything you want to shout out or any last thoughts?
I think this has been great. I'll just end with this. You know, we appreciate all of our supporters, and we always are responsive when you guys reach out and contact us. And I just want to let you know that, like, we appreciate your support and we want it to keep coming. Please help us out. We do have an upcoming, this hasn't even been announced yet, but we have an upcoming matching grant coming up. And so it's going to definitely be well used this year. We actually are going to be going back to Freedom Fest. We haven't really been talking about this yet, but we are going to be at Freedom Fest this year. We encourage you to go and come meet with us. We're going to have a great time. We'll do some recording. We'll do some goofing around, and it's going to be hilarious and awesome. And it's going to be in Las Vegas. We're going to have a great time. I hope that you will come join us. It's just going to be fantastic. If you are willing to help contribute and kind of help make that happen, that would be great, because we're kind of reaching out in faith here and trying to make things happen in new ways this year. So lots more that are on the horizon, things we haven't even announced yet, at least not in public. We appreciate your support. What you do matters. Everything, I like to say that whatever we do, whenever we throw content out into the world, it is as if all of our supporters are together in chorus, in concert, putting it out together. And that's how we have this effect upon the world. And if we want to resist both the state and the intrusions of bad theology, like Christian nationalism, for instance, then we appreciate your support in helping us to do that. So thank you very much, everybody. And I will see you guys next time. I got to get out of here because I'm already getting the signals from upstairs.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Norm. Thank you, Cody. Thank you, everybody, for watching. And we will talk to you again next time. Until then, live at peace, live for Christ. Thank you.